Welcome to the universe we call home, as well as others. Here, we collide the universes of fact and fiction. Are you ready to take it to the max?
Hello everyone, welcome back to the max. Zach, how is it going? Happy to be back with you.
Oh, it's so good to be in the studio. Oh, the studio.
Studio.
The room again.
It's a beautiful studio. Yeah. I just noticed the Jackie Chan poster over there.
What?
Yeah, there's a Jackie Chan poster.
Oh, would you look at that? I didn't even realize.
Beautiful stuff, aren't I? Yeah, the studio's the best.
Discovering new things we didn't put here.
What a man, Jackie Chan. Not gonna lie, I've been watching some of his older...
Seen Rush Hour?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you just watch some of the things and you say, wow, what a
talented man.
What a talented man. But, you know,
today's podcast is not about Jackie Chan.
As much as I would love to have it about him.
Yeah.
I have so many things I could say about it. Like that one Johnny Walker ad where they CGI'd him. Have you ever seen that?
I don't think I have, but I can assume what happened. See, kinda.
Oh, it just looks really off.
He does some ninja things.
Oh, no, it's just him talking, but they CGI'd it. Because he's dead by the time they made the ad, right?
Right.
And it looks first of all, it just feels like they'd be using his name, and he's probably rolling over in his grave.
I don't like that.
He's actually flipping in his grave, you know.
Yeah.
It's the man that he is.
Yeah, he's flipping, doing front flips and back flips in his corpse.
Yeah. So it is a fantastic day to be doing a podcast.
Pouring rain, very cold, the heater is on. It's just time.
It just doesn't seem to be working, though.
It's on. We'll give it the benefit of the doubt this time. But yeah, a good day to be talking about space.
It's a great day. And before we get into this, I'd just like to say that I think this is a pretty interesting topic.
That's what I say. That's my line.
But I want to say it today.
No, that's my line. How dare you?
So today, we're going to be talking about kind of the past and future of spaceflight and propulsion systems.
Rockets.
And, you know, just where all the people, how people got to
the moon
and how they're going to get to Mars and the moon again. So Zach, I want to ask you, what is your favorite rocket?
Well, I think all time, it's got to be the OG, the Saturn V. I mean, this thing, it was a monster, basically. It was the same height as a 36-story tall building, which is, just picture that. Just picture you're walking in, let's say, New York, and you look up, and you see, a big skyscraper, and you count all the windows until you get to the 36th window. That's how tall this thing was.
That just
puts a picture into your mind of how unnormally huge this rocket was.
I think you mean abnormally.
Abnormally. You got me there.
I got you there. So I think before we actually get into all the details about the Saturn V, I want to talk about kind of the reason, and I've touched about this, I think, a while back in the Science of War, I think.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
But I want to talk about, you know, the reason that we have the rockets and why there was the space race and all that stuff.
Cold War! Yay!
So, the beginning of this, and the reason we have this, was obviously the Cold War. It's really strange how science only comes along
with war.
In a lot of instances, big things only happen, with war. There's a big motivation. There's an incentive not to die.
Yeah.
You know, it's surprising they care so much.
Yeah. Well, originally, when they built the first thingy to go fly in the atmosphere, it wasn't to go to the moon. It was to try and spy on the Russians.
Yay.
And vice versa, the Russians spying on the Americans.
And that this was the whole point of the space race. It was to get space supremacy. A lot of the stuff is like, hey, if we can get... Imagine having something up in orbit and just putting a missile on it, and you can launch it...
And then just like that, you've
from
got
space. And you have it instantaneously, and it's a lot harder for the U.S. to track it, because it's on,
Constant orbit. At least at the time.
Obviously, today. But it was something that it frightened the U.S., and it frightened, obviously, the Russians to be...
Wary of a comeback.
Exactly.
And now look where we are. We're going to Mars. Thank you, Cold War.
So I think the most important thing that came out of this was
this very cold time, you would say,
was actually the rocket equation. Now this is the thing that I want to bring up, that the Russians really did win the space race.
Well, they did. They were. I hate how people like to say you can be first in the race for the whole time, but if you don't cross the finish line first, then you didn't win.
Yeah.
But let's just be honest here. They did everything else
first.
Okay, look,
they launched the first probe. That's winning a race right there. Yeah. They came up with the rocket equation, which allowed them to do that. Now, the rocket equation is something that, I like math, but it's really complicated. But it's basically finding the change in not only gravity, which is slight, but that doesn't matter in this case, but the mass as you're burning the fuel, the rate of the burning fuel, and the amount of thrust you're getting, and then calculating orbits using that. It's a really difficult thing, because you have a constant rate of burning, but you're going to be accelerating. So first you're going to be fighting against Earth's acceleration, but then as you have less mass, you're going to start getting more, you're going to have more acceleration every time that you burn.
Less mass, meaning you're burning fuel.
Yeah, you're burning fuel, which
lowers
your mass, which allows the same amount of fuel being burned the next time, increasing your total acceleration.
Which is very smart.
It's very smart, but it's a difficult thing, and you have to do a lot of calculus doing the rate of change for...
Oh, good old calculus. Well, yeah. Never fails to be involved.
It never does.
Oh.
I'm scared. Anyways, it was something that really was revolutionary, and I think a lot of people think, oh, they just wanted satellites, but this rocket equation also allowed them to calculate the trajectories for just missiles, just straight-up missiles.
Air defense, we're talking here.
Which is a great thing, you know? I like missiles.
Yeah, bombs, yes, yes.
And obviously, like, you could calculate bomb trajectories a lot easier with, you know, regular missiles just using Newtonian physics, because there wasn't the huge burning of a payload, because a lot of the time it was more of a parabola than what it seemed to go straight up, right?
Right.
So this whole rocket equation was really essential in the launching of actual rockets and not just missiles, although the term rocket can be applied to missiles.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Well, just moving on then. We'll forget about the terms.
We'll forget about the terms, but... You know, it was something that is so important, and it's still so important today, because we launch tons of space, like, we launched the space station, we launched...
SpaceX recently passed their 400th satellite into orbit. Like, 400.
Satellites are something that's so game-changing to everyone here on Earth, and that's only possible because of the rocket equation.
Thank you, Russians.
Exactly.
Thank you to the Russians.
This is the thing that I want to say, that the Russians won. And don't think it's treason, because I'm not an American.
Yes. Woohoo.
Canada.
Yes.
What were we even doing in the Cold War? I want to ask you, Zach. Do you even know?
Riding our meese to the igloo.
to get some maple syrup
from the maple tree nearby. And playing some hockey. Playing some stick and puck.
I'm sure we were just having a great time with the beavers, you know.
Helping them build their dams while everyone else is just out fighting in the world. We're chilling in our igloos. Yeah, but just so in case you guys didn't realize when we were talking about the studio, this is an igloo.
It's an igloo, and ice is surprisingly... Oh, snow is surprisingly soundproofing.
Yeah,
I know.
This
is the reason...
You wouldn't think it, but no one can really hear us outside because of the snow.
Think about it. It's a crystalline kind of thing, and I guess it kind of prevents air molecules from traveling through it.
Hence
it absorbs the sound, right?
Yeah. Thank you, igloo.
Thank you, igloo.
Pat on the ground for you, igloo.
Honestly, like, I made an igloo, I think, a couple years ago.
Oh, I remember that.
And you go inside, right?
It's weird.
I would yell. You cannot hear.
It's
like the person standing literally outside.
Yeah.
So it's actually a very...
Any new podcasters in Canada, igloo is your new place.
We've been doing it for a while. The heater's kind of messing with it. It's like...
You might hear some weird sound because of this heater, but if you ever are looking to start a podcast, make an igloo.
Make an igloo. You're going to need to put an AC unit next to the heater, just for a reference to everyone doing that, to make sure that it doesn't melt. And then you're also going to need to make some kind of smokestack, I think, just to kind of funnel the heat out.
We'll leave that up to you.
You guys are experts at it.
You take it from here.
Honestly, 10 out of 10 to igloos.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's what we were doing.
Here. Igloo segment, checked off.
Checked off.
Definitely what we wanted to talk about.
We're just blowing through these. We're just hitting up all the highlights.
Yep.
But with that being said, the rocket equation was something that allowed the space race to really even take place in the first place.
Well, obviously.
It was the main factor. I know that you want to talk about your Saturn V.
Oh, the beauty rocket.
So go ahead. Have a good one, Zach.
Oh, well, this was, as I said before, the biggest rocket that has ever been constructed, or that has been sent into orbit so far. It weighed 2.8 million kilograms, and for you, what, do we use pounds or do we not use pounds? Pounds is the American system.
That is so weird. You know, I've never thought of that. But Canada has a metric system, right?
But we just don't talk about it.
But we use pounds instead of kilograms. Like, we use meters. But meters and kilograms are part of the same system. Why do we use pounds? Literally, I have a scale, and it measures in pounds.
That's the metric system. Yet we don't use yards.
No, we're not imperialists.
Yeah. Americans.
Americans.
Yeah, but yeah, this was a very heavy rocket. And just to further reference, 6.2 million pounds is 2.8 million kilograms.
And based off that, I made a slight equation, roughly, just rounding Earth's acceleration. That means it needs about 25 million newtons of force.
To leave the ground.
Just to leave the ground. And obviously, using the rocket equation, you can calculate the difference, the amount of newtons needed as you lose weight. But that is an insane...
That's a big number. But even with that astronomically large number, it did produce 35 million newtons, so easily accelerating past the ground with 10 million newtons to spare.
Yeah. So, well, roughly 10 million.
You know, we might be off of one or two, but, you know.
Just one or 2 million, you know.
We might.
That's the stuff you can
Don't take it here, but, you know. It made it off the ground. I think we all watched it.
That's a crazy amount of force. Like...
And if you want, just before you get into the force, if you want me to put how much fuel that this rocket needed to leave, if you had a car that could travel 48 kilometers, I believe, for per gallon of fuel, that car, if only using the fuel stored inside this Saturn V rocket, could go around the Earth 800 times.
Literally, he told me this before we recorded. I heard eight, and I was like, oh, eight times sounds about right.
Reasonable.
You know, that's a huge amount of distance already.
Yeah, and then you just add one more zero, and then, I forgot the second zero there.
Like, it is insane.
800
amount
times.
Of distance you're getting. Like, 800 times.
And think of all of that fuel just compressed into one 36-story tall rocket.
And, oh, man. I mean, rockets are truly one of the coolest things I've ever built humans have.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, too. I mean, has anyone, looked at a rocket when they first saw it and just thought, like...
You have to admire it.
You have to admire it.
And, email us what you think was a better human achievement other than making a rocket.
TwoMaxPodcast09@gmail.com.
Quick plug. But, yeah, personally, it has to be the rocket. Like, think about it. At least in our existence... No other time, maybe the Trojan horse might be up there.
Trojan horse.
But we sent an object into the stars and onto a surface that's not this planet using a rocket ship that's completely massive.
Zach, if you want me to be poetic for a second.
Oh, yeah, please take out your poet glasses.
I am quite a poet, might I say.
You might be you're a very poetic person.
For the longest time, the stars were just something that existed just to guide us. Everything up there was just untouchable, just something that existed up there. And until that day, we had never set foot. It was just a plane of existence to us that was unreachable. But on that day, we reached the place, the very place that we looked up for generations. The moon, something we saw in the night almost every single night, except for the full moons or new moons. And we reached something that our ancestors probably would have thought would have been impossible. Something that it was the first thing that helped us catapult ourselves into the existence of space flight and into the traveling of our cosmos.
It's beautiful. I've got tears in my eyes, everyone.
I know.
Tears in my eyes after
And you
that.
Can support my poetry by going to our Patreon.
Oh, here we go again.
Another one.
Here we go.
Yeah. So I
more poems.
More poems.
More poems coming soon. Special Patreon users will get a free poem written.
I'll literally write a poem for you.
by our very own Max here, our poetic Max.
So, the Saturn V, I think it's you say it used about 1.2 million liters of water in its chemical reactions, and about liters of kerosene.
770,000 liters of.
That's 0.7, right?
Kerosene fuels. Yeah, sure. We could 0.7 or 770,000. I think 770,000 sounds a bit better.
Sounds a bit bigger.
But you know, you can do what you want. Yeah.
So that is a lot of water, and we.
Not water, liquid oxygen.
Liquid oxygen. Sorry, I completely.
just think, Max. You want to give the Olympic swimming pool.
So an Olympic swimming pool. First of all, I want to say that it has. That a liter is
Think of a milk
jug. It's just
jug.
An area. It's an area covered by it, right? A liter is like a cubic meter is the same as a liter, right?
I don't think so. Not a cubic meter.
Not cubic a cubic. Meter's a lot bigger. Sorry. But a cubic centimeter is equivalent to one. Huh.
Max is blanking. Maybe a cubic foot.
Is it a?
No, not even a cubic foot. I don't
what
know. What
is a liter? Why?
How did we come all this way to not know how much 1 liter is? We came all this way. But Max, just before you click a liter, or well, as you're Googling a liter, do you want to explain the dimensions of an Olympic swimming pool?
Okay, a liter is 1 kilogram of water under standard conditions. So that's, you know, Earth gravity with the same pressure, average 1 atmosphere.
So you're saying if I took a liter of water to the sun, it wouldn't be a liter anymore?
Oh no, it'd still be a liter, but if you're
liter.
It's a liter. Liters are always going to be the same, but it's just going to be different to measure it, just because you have to factor in different atmospheres and stuff.
That's weird.
So like, if you were measuring at 9 atmospheres. You'd have to factor that in order to figure out how many liters you had.
Well, let's keep to measuring liters on Earth atmosphere.
And kilograms is in weights, right?
I believe so.
So water is more dense than oxygen, which means that you need more oxygen to fill the exact same amount of liters.
Right.
So we searched it up, is it 1.5 million tons of liters of water.
I thought it was like 2.2.
Oh, it's 2.2. Something around there, right?
For an Olympic swimming pool, 2.2 million liters of water.
So it's about emptying about half. It's about half of an Olympic swimming pool of water inside, right?
I believe so.
But that's oxygen, so it's actually a little bit more in terms of just...
Density. Still, humongous.
Humongous.
Now just think of take away half of an Olympic swimming pool.
And Olympic swimming pools are huge. Like, usually they're like about 25 meters across, 50 long.
Yeah.
And then they're usually like 4 meters deep. Sometimes they're even deeper.
Depending on, the event. But just think of taking half of that and sticking it inside of a rocket. That's how much, that's just half of, or, well,
that is a
bit
huge
more than
space.
Half.
Like, just the... even putting just that area inside of a rocket just makes you think how big those rockets were in the first place.
And that's only a bit more than half of this rocket's fuel. Well, not a bit more than half. We have 500,000 more. But you know.
I mean, like, actually think about it. Kerosene plus the oxygen, that's about Olympic swimming pool in just liters.
Yeah, well, if you combine them both, take that whole Olympic swimming pool, now put it in a rocket, and that's your fuel.
That is just a crazy amount.
That's crazy.
And you can see the chemical reaction. You can see how much energy it's producing.
Well, 35 million newtons. That's how much.
Exactly. And that's why they need so much of it. Because they need to produce all that force.
Well, yeah, it's got
to
go up somehow. Especially with that much weight.
But so, anyways, that's the Saturn V. One of the greatest...
man-made things ever. I think it's safe to say ever.
I think it is definitely safe to say that.
But no.
So now I want to move on to a rocket that
newer times.
Is pioneering the future. Not the present, I guess.
Yeah, this being the Falcon 9.
And this SpaceX. Is the rocket that is used by SpaceX, exactly.
Elon, and we thank you.
Elon, if you'd love to come on the podcast, hit us up.
Thanks, Elon. We appreciate you for everything you've done.
But it is a
It's still a beast.
It's still a fantastic, and it shows how much times have changed. Now, it doesn't produce the exact same amount of thrust, I believe.
Well, yeah, let me just give you the facts. I told you the Saturn V was 36 stories tall, and that comes up to be 111 meters tall. This Falcon 9 rocket is only 70 meters tall, so you're missing 40 meters. That's a lot. But then it is also a lot more compact than the Saturn V. The diameter of this Falcon 9 is only 3.7 meters. And just think about it. Think about that. Stretch like your arms out and do like your wingspan, and then try. Actually, I don't know. That's a bad example. But just think of like 4 meters in diameter from where you are. 2 meters on each side, from the center, and that's how wide this thing is. That's how wide it is. Doesn't that seem crazy?
Yeah, that is.
And this thing's supposed to send people to the moon, and it's only 4 meters wide.
Well, this isn't the thing that's sending them to the moon, Zach. It's sending people into
orbit.
Orbit, like low Earth orbit. And then it's going to come back down. And low Earth orbit, geostationary orbit, which is where satellites are.
And to the moon.
And possibly to the moon and Mars, I guess.
Yeah, it can still be included. But yeah, it only weighed 550,000 kg, or kilograms, compared to the Saturn V being 2.8 million. So take that into perspective. It's a lot less heavy, yet still extremely heavy.
So it says that basically at sea level, in the first stage, the engines produce about 7,600 kilonewtons. So that means 7 million newtons the first stage produces.
That's a lot, but it's not as much
as much. Saturn V. But makes sense because it's lighter. It weighs a lot less. In fact, you said it weighs about 0.5 about 500,000 pounds or
yeah,
kilograms.
We could go to that.
And a fully fueled Saturn V weighs about 6 million. So makes sense it would need less newtons. But it's still 7 million newtons. And I don't know if that's from each booster individually on the first stage or not, but that is still a ton of force.
Yeah, we can't undersight that at all.
And I just wanna say we'd be thinking about that force on the rocket, but think about how much force that is on the Earth. Not a lot.
Yeah, if we want to really put it into perspective, it's not that much.
I'd like to know how much force is needed to move the Earth a certain distance.
Probably it'd be a bit more.
So you gotta say,
just put a little booster on the back on the side of the Earth and like us in like, just Brazil or anywhere on the equator and just. You know, just push it.
You'd tear the Earth apart, I think. You'd go through the crust.
It'd be pretty
before
deadly.
That. You'd go through the crust and kill people. I mean, the same thing comes if you prevented the Earth from spinning.
That'd suck.
You'd kill everyone.
Yeah, we'd just fly. Wouldn't we just fly?
Well, here's the thing.
We'd get sucked to the ground, wouldn't we?
Okay, there's a couple things. First of all, everyone would maintain their inertia, except the Earth wouldn't. So that means
We'd
fly off. However, the Earth's spin actually helps prevent us from... It actually lessens the gravity, in a sense, just because we have some forward motion, which counteracts the centripetal force pulling us in. So that would also increase the gravitational force on us. And it would literally rip everything out, because it would stop everything. The buildings would still have inertia, and they would continue flying when the Earth wasn't. We would go flying, there's literally no way you could be safe. Like, imagine if you were in a plane. Actually, that would be probably the only way that you could have a possible safety is if you were somehow flying, but...
In a plane, and then the pilot was good enough to take back control.
Yeah, but still, that'd be crazy.
And how would you land?
You wouldn't. You'd just die.
You'd just die. Oh, well, sucks to be you, pilot.
Sucks to be you.
We gave you a chance, but didn't work out.
You can't get through.
Yeah, but back to the Falcon 9. If this shuttle was to take a payload to Mars, it would only be about 4,000 kg. So let's just think of its total mass, the 550,000 kg. Now think 4,000 kg. Max, you want to just whip out the calculator and do 4,000 divided by 550,000?
So you can
just
4,000.
Yep. Yeah. 550.
550. 000. 000.
Now what percent do we get? Not even 1% of the total payload. 0.007 of the total weight makes it to Mars. But obviously, the Falcon 9 is reusable. As we've seen, it lands back down on Earth.
Which I think is a pinnacle of technology. It's something that's so cool. It's something we see in every sci-fi film, is a ship that can go up, and it comes back down.
With no problems.
And it lands. And reusable booster technology is just something really cool.
Yeah, we can get into the future of booster technology. And
so we're going to take a quick break, I guess.
Oh, you didn't even let me finish my sentence. I was about to have a perfect transition.
Don't worry, but I want to say something. So, basically, the Earth weighs about 6 times 10 to the 24th power. So that's 6 with 24 zeros on the end of it, right?
Yeah.
And then if you want to get the amount of force needed to accelerate that, just times that by how many meters per second you want to go forward. So if you wanted 1 meter per second in one direction, if you want to get the Earth moving that fast in a direction, you will need to apply 6 times 10 to the 24th power newtons to it.
Come on, NASA. We'll be expecting, whenever you're ready, we'll be waiting for you to push Earth forward.
So literally, even if every single person jumped at one time on one side of the Earth in one location,
imagine that.
We'd push off the Earth with nothing compared, because you need to be talking in comparable to Earth math. Earth mass type forces.
Right.
So anyways, with that break. Perfect transition done, we'll be right back in a second. Hello everyone, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed us making money.
Yeah, sure.
It surely made me happy.
Oh yeah, please Anchor, if you're listening, another ad.
But I just want to say that me and Zach just figured out that we're on the 40th episode, which is kind of crazy. So,
that's a lot.
So on the 50th episode, we're going to do something special.
Know what that is.
Don't know what it is, but if you guys have anyone that you'd like to have on the podcast.
Hopefully some fan-submitted questions.
No
matter how hard we beg.
There's nothing happening.
Yeah, come on, guys. It's the 50th episode. Give us something. We'll try and remind everyone every episode.
I'll literally just scream anyone's name who does it.
Wake up random questions and put random names.
I'm just going to take anyone who follows us and just pretend that they had a question.
Yep. Yep. Expect either, if you don't send us a question, your name might be said if you follow us on any social media. Or if you do have a real question, social media, DM, email.
Please, any of the above.
Yeah, hopefully a Q&A episode 50 will be coming soon.
Hopefully so. So, we're going to hop back into this, it's kind of my turn to start talking about the future of spacecraft and technology, as well as just the future of our missions from NASA and stuff.
Specifically?
The Artemis program.
Oh, you read my mind. It's almost like there's so many others I was thinking about, and you just picked the one that I was homing in on.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay. So, the Artemis program is the most... It's coming out quite soon. I thought 2022. That's when the Artemis program is. And you know what's sad? There seems to be so little hype about it.
And no one cares. But it's really such a big thing. I mean, we've covered it in a lot of our episodes. We talk about it. It's really cool, but just no one seems to be bringing it up as much as I think they should be.
In fact, maybe we should get the hype by reaching out to someone at the Artemis program.
Hey, Artemis scientists, if you are listening, we'd love to have you.
Hopefully you're listening to this because we've contacted you.
Yeah. Yeah, if that's you, we'd like a response would be beautiful.
But the Artemis program is actually something really cool. And they're using a lot of old but new technology.
Old but revolutionized to be new.
Yes.
Same types of technology?
I think everything's based off the same principles, but just...
new.
New. And I think the first thing that's just something really cool is the SLS rocket.
The new and improved Saturn V, so to say.
It is even better than the Saturn V, which is one of the best rockets.
Well, yeah. First, Saturn V. Second, Falcon 9. And now here comes this SLS just sweeping the competition. And I think it's going to take the place of the Falcon 9. Maybe not for nostalgic reasons, but for just being super cool. Max, why don't you tell me about this SLS?
So, it is going to be...
bigger.
It's going to be even bigger than the Saturn V, which is... you know, it's a huge rocket.
Imagine being taller than a 36-story rocket. Imagine saying you see that and you're like, nah, we gotta go bigger.
Some fact I heard about the Saturn V just is that it's taller than the New York State Building. But my first thought was
the Statue of Liberty.
Statue of Liberty, sorry, not New the York New York State Building.
Which building is the New York, the New York State Building?
What the hell is that?
There's like, actually, you want to talk about all like 500 New York State buildings? I'm sure it's bigger than most
of them.
Did
you say all 500? Do you think there's only 500 buildings in the whole state of New York?
I don't know.
Zach, there's probably more of them than just New York.
Billions.
Yeah, and billions is also wrong, Zach.
Shut up, Max. All right, well, moving on. It's taller than the Statue of Liberty, and, which is humongous.
But that brings up a thing. I'd love to talk about crowd statistics one day, which is really interesting stuff. But I just like to wonder, how many people have actually seen the Empire...
The New York State Building?
The New York State Building. The Statue of Liberty.
I haven't. I haven't been there.
Like, okay, I understand. People in New York, I want to say that, you know, probably...
If you live in New York, you've
At least it. Most people have seen it, whether or not they actually went there just to see it.
Or just
walked past it. Or,
I mean, it's on an island, but, you know...
It's on an island, but you might see it from the road or, like, on a building that you work at.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you live there, it's probably something you go and do.
Yeah.
But then, obviously, it's a tourist destination. Like, you know, New York's a place. But still, you gotta wonder, what percent of the people, like, what about people in Canada? You know?
I'd say a lot.
A lot? Okay.
What percent of the world population? I just figure out what is the most visited town, and what their biggest landmark is,
and then
calculate how many people have been there.
And then, we gotta calculate the percentage of people who visit that landmark when they come to the city.
Survey time.
We gotta see cities' most famous landmarks and then see which one gets the most amount of visitors per year, and then based off the amount of people that arrive in that city per year. That would be fun.
Science experiment coming up. Well, why didn't I have this for science fair?
Because you're not smart like me, obviously.
Yep, Max, you're the mini kid in the room.
Yeah, I'm...
Definitely?
Definitely. So, anyways...
space.
It's a really cool rocket. It's going to be carrying up the Gateway program, which is something that's going to be pioneered for the Artemis mission, which is something to help them. That's going to be around the orbit of the moon, which is going to be keeping in contact with the people on the moon.
I think it's safe to call it a moon space station.
It's a moon space station. And the cool thing is, it's going to be just keeping a lot of the life support, like backup life support, and keeping the people in contact. And it's kind of the thing that they're going to end up translating over to the Mars missions.
That doesn't sound very familiar. Mars missions? What? We're actually doing it? I thought it was just a joke, guys. Elon, you're actually taking us there? Wow. Elon didn't let us down.
You know what's really funny? And I think I said this before. But people just dropped Mars when they heard that little thing about Venus.
Yeah, all the hype just switched over to Venus for 2 days.
And then all the hype just disappeared because people couldn't get interested in the actual science.
Yeah, it's sad how much people rely on a headline to really show them how much they care about something.
The news is a really weird thing, and we're actually going to be getting, hopefully, someone who is very involved in the news, and maybe talking to them.
About news.
About the news, because, you know...
It's a very important factor.
Like, and that's the thing with a lot of science stories, you end up with a one-day catch. Where people say, wow, that's so cool.
I can't wait to figure out more. And then the next show comes on and they have never heard of it again.
Yeah, because, you know, the news realize they can get a little bit of boost out of it. But then once the scientists start saying, oh, well, you know, there's actually possibilities not. It's going to have to go through peer reviews, you know.
It might take another 5 years.
It's a headline like, life on Venus. But then, you know, once they realize it's not really going to be life on Venus, well.
That's it. They don't care anymore.
The news industry is a very interesting industry.
And scary.
And scary. I mean, the amount of control they have.
And influence.
Influence.
Yeah, but new space. Screw the media. We're our own media. We share our own news. What do we have to say?
We need a name.
ToTheMaxRadio.com.
ToTheMaxMedia.
Yeah, ToTheMaxMedia. There we go. That's all we need. ToTheMaxNews. All right, what's this new space?
What's
our headline?
So, I think my headline today is going to be...
Life on Moon?
I think it's going to be Hidden Alien Organization Working Within the Moon, Access from Dark Side of the Moon to Nearby Star Using Warp Drive to Communicate.
Now that'll get the people's attention.
That will.
Yeah. Stay tuned, new podcast on evil aliens in the moon coming soon.
Of course, if we don't do it, that means we've been brainwashed and abducted, so...
Hey, keep an eye out. Keep an eye out.
This is our warning. Isn't it funny how quickly we jumped to that?
Yeah.
But on a serious note, I want to talk about two fantastic methods of new space travel, and then finally compare them with the good old chemical burns.
Chemical burns. Woo!
My favorite.
Combustion.
So the first one is what I can only call light propulsion. There's literally nothing else to it.
Then light beam go boom.
So it's really weird, but... There are these small probes.
There are thousands of these small probes.
Literally millions, actually.
Millions of these small probes, mind me.
That are going to be controlled by NASA, that are going to be released and powered by literally a flashlight. Well, not a flashlight, an even smaller light, a tiny light. Now, these things are very light, but they have almost no protection against them, so that's why they're sending so much, because literally anything that hits them will destroy them.
Sucks to be them. I mean, they have a million of them. They probably don't have a great hit or, like, win ratio, let's call it, with a successful probe, but a million of them is a lot.
There's probably even more of them. So it's a very interesting concept, and the funny thing was I was thinking about this, actually, as kind of a fun thing to do. Before NASA even started talking about this, that's my claim to fame. But I was thinking, would it be possible to actually move something using just light? Because light is equivalent to mass, in a sense. Obviously, E equals mc squared.
Thank you, Einstein.
So that means if you're throwing out light, that means you must be experiencing some sort of acceleration. And... based off that, that means that that ceiling light we have up there is accelerating, in a sense. But the problem is that it's such a slow acceleration for most of these things, because they weigh so much, and the acceleration of light is quite minimal.
These million little droids weigh so much?
Well, no, these guys weigh absolutely nothing. That's the whole point. That's why they're so fragile.
Never mind.
I'm talking about regular... lights. This is why they don't move.
Oh, forgot it. Yeah. All right. Yeah, keep going.
And they're meant to be really light, so that way the light actually has an effect. And I heard within a year they could travel up to half the speed of light, or something around that. Which is crazy, because they weigh very little and they're emitting light. And this light has a dramatic effect on it. It's the same thing as, I think, you know, if you're punching... If you're punching a punching bag that's just, you know, a regular punching bag versus punching a punching bag that's filled with concrete. If you're the light in this scenario and, you know, the little droid is just a regular punching bag, well, you're moving it a lot more than if it was a concrete bag.
Right.
Because, you know, your same amount of force has a lot more effect on something that has a lot less momentum.
Right.
So, yeah, I think this is a really cool idea, and basically... it works by basically...
but what's going to happen once these probes leave? What are they going
to
do?
They're going to be just heading out there. They'll be actually getting to nearby stars. They're going to, like, surpass the Voyager missions like that.
Are they going to take photos? If they're so small, what can they possibly put on them?
But they actually do have some kind of information relay thing. But, they probably have, like, a little communicator and some kind of... I just thought of something interesting. If they're traveling at half the speed of light, that means that if they're a light year away, by the time they send something back to you, they'll be a light year and a half away when you receive it, right?
Okay.
And then if you send it back to them, they'll be even farther away. Like, that's a weird...
That's a lot of timing that these NASA astronauts are going to have to put into this.
Yeah. But I think they're probably going to be out there to capture data. And actually, you know, they'll be kind of the first craft that ever make it to another solar system. Because of their insane speed.
That's going to be crazy.
It is.
Just thinking about that, that'll be crazy.
I mean, just thinking about all the advances in just science in general is crazy. So much stuff that would be considered completely science fiction, like powering craft by throwing out light.
Just think of that. Using a lamp to send a probe into orbit.
Well, the problem is, Zach, a lamp weighs far too much.
It was a prank.
It was a prank?
All right, what about is there another probe that's being sent up, or maybe not as light, but a new innovation in technology?
Well, I just want to say that if you wanted to actually calculate sort of the amount of, you know, acceleration these objects would get, you could do some math and basically take the energy output of them and then divide that, like, because their momentum will be equal to the their actual energy output divided by the speed of light. That's the same as regular energy in the momentum, in the sense that you're doing, it's semi-similar because you're using mass and velocity in terms of momentum in regular terms.
P equals E divided by C.
So that means, like, you know, their complete power will be their energy divided by the speed of light, which is equivalent to math in mass. Or not equivalent, but related to math. And math. Why do I keep saying math?
I don't know. Max, I mean, you just have a stutter.
Because it is math.
Well,
But you can calculate this stuff and find out the exact acceleration they'll get. And obviously, the more power they put into it, that means the more acceleration they can get. And then the less it weighs, that means the more acceleration they can get. So anyways, I want to move on to the second and final method in this, which is ion engines.
Now, if any of you Martian fans are out there...
Or even just sci-fi fans are out there...
You'll remember Hermes and its ion engine. Max, why don't you explain what an ion engine is for those who might not know?
Okay, so an ion engine is actually quite a simple concept, but a brilliant concept in a sense.
It works perfectly.
It works perfectly. So it is an engine that gets tiny amounts of acceleration by... And it's actually rather similar to this light thing, because it's acceleration over time.
And it's constant.
They're going to keep throwing out tiny particles. And you can deduce the momentum of those particles and then find the force that's being put back onto the craft.
Right.
And even if these have very little impact on their own, together they will all help speed up this craft, and it will just keep going for long, long periods of time. Now build up to huge amounts of acceleration.
Ion engines.
And these are really cool things, especially for deep space travel, because, you know, unlike chemical burns, you're not going to run out of fuel, so you can actually adjust for things after. And although you don't have the immediate quick speed, because it's constant acceleration over very long periods of time, that really, you know, actually helps you just get to a very quick speed.
Yeah.
Actually, fast speed. Quick is just like acceleration. Fast is
the actual speed.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, I can get around that.
All right. So, now the final part of this is I just want to compare these three forms of space propulsion and just kind of talk about which one's the best.
Small probe, ion engine, rocket ship. Where do we go from here?
Well, let's go through a couple categories. Number one is the payload and just the amount of stuff that you're actually going to be moving. Now for this, it just completely rules light out of the equation. You're never going to be pushing large amounts of light with this, just because the amount of acceleration you get is not going to be ever good enough to get a huge amount of acceleration out of it.
So now that's gone.
Literally a regular flashlight would get like a meter over a year.
Damn.
Which is absolutely nothing.
Yeah, so where do you get this big light from then?
Right, you don't get a big light. You just don't use light in the first place.
All right, it's gone.
Light is not meant for using big payloads. Just transporting anything big.
So industrial or big loads of stuff should never be used with light. All right, we got it.
But, however, chemical burns will work fine, And the same thing with Argon. Or
Ion engines.
You're just... Those things both have enough thrust, and the ion engines will be a little bit slower, but then they'll eventually reach same speed and overtake. But both of those will be very effective in dealing with large amounts, because the chemical current, obviously, you produce a ton of force, and ion is just constant acceleration, so you're going to keep chipping away at it.
Exactly. So now what would you choose? You got a lot of people?
Well, don't...
Max, I'm putting all the pressure on you.
Hey, not yet. We gotta go over a few more variables.
Oh, okay, fine. Yeah, I'll ask at the end.
This is being in a planet, in a gravitational well, in a...
What a metaphor.
It is barely a metaphor, Zach. It's the truth.
Can't be a metaphor when it's true.
So this is basically, let's say you're on Earth and you want to launch something. Now it's pretty clear which one you want to choose right now. There's literally no way you could use tiny amounts of acceleration to pick up over time.
So you always would have to start with a chemical bond.
You almost always have to. Unless we somehow come up with a way to start building ships right in outer space, you're usually going to have to launch your ships...
From Earth.
From Earth using chemical burns. Because it's the only way to generate the huge amounts of force you need to get off the planet.
We can accept that there's no alternative, at least for leaving the atmosphere.
At least for leaving the atmosphere. But I think then I just want to talk about deep space and just if you just want to get the fastest top speed, that's where you're going to go light and argon, or sorry, ion engines. I keep saying argon because some of these engines throw out argon, which is a very good particle to throw out. It's inert, so you can store it easily.
Nice. All right.
But anyways, you want to use light, then an ion engine. And finally, the chemical burn in last for speed, top speed, because you get that huge amount of speed initially with the chemical burn, but then you start slowing down. And that's just, sorry, not slowing down. You're not going to slow down in space, but you're not going to ever get faster. Whereas the light is a constant acceleration, and the same thing with the ion engines. However, ion engines are bigger and require a little bit more mass, so it'll take longer to reach a speed. And especially if you have a small thing with the light, you can reach, as I said, up to half the speed of light, which is just really quick.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine the amount of time dilation you would have going that fast.
It'd be weird. You'd come back or you'd turn around. Well, if you could turn around. But you'd turn around and you'd come back and you'd be just a little bit, you'd be younger than everyone. Everyone would have aged except for you.
I mean, this is the one thing I thought about in using black holes, is use them as a slingshot for going really fast.
As long as you don't get sucked in.
As long as you don't get sucked in. But if you have enough speed, you should be able to use the curved space-time.
I'm sure the scientists could help us with this one.
Well, they use Jupiter, and this is just a lot more...
New Horizons, for example. They use Jupiter to catapult...
The same thing with even the original Voyagers.
They used all three. Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, and Uranus.
Because they were all lined up.
Yeah, the perfect time.
And the same thing could be used with black hole. And this is something I actually thought of. And I think this is something that you could do to preserve that velocity without having to slow around. And this is something they actually do with, you know, they pick up speed by going around Earth, and it helps them just keep the same velocity, and they go around the moon when they do these moon missions to maintain velocity but keep in that curved orbit.
All right.
So now you ask me what am I using?
Yeah, well, you're the NASA man. You're in charge. You've got two ships to put your crewmates on. You've got a light thingy, and you've got an ion engine, and you've got your chemical bond. And so they're all three of them are kind of just sitting there. The crew's on the chemical bond, and you got to tell them which one to dock with. What are you going with?
Well, okay. So I have to get them on. Obviously, they have to be on the chemical burn ship.
To start. That's what I'm saying.
We can't get out. Yeah, I just want to clarify that. But then as soon as I'm out, I'm docking them with that ion engine one. You know what would be fantastic? We could even get a little bit of speed, just started with that one, just get it to orbit Earth while we're sending them up, build up some speed. Now you even have, you know, now that it can just carry a lot more mass. The light ones are impractical carrying anything big. It's just, that's something that's just kind of a fact. But, you know.
That's okay.
That's okay.
We'll give it to the ion engine.
Ion engine.
Give it up.
It's the engine of the future for deep space travel, and you know, for just if you have a stationary orbit around something, ion engine it. Just that way you can just keep it going around, and then just pick up where you started. No need for the huge chemical burns, and You can just constantly accelerate. I feel like it's a lot better.
Beautiful. Ion engine for the win. Keep in mind, for deep space travel, SpaceX, Mars, anything further, an ion engine will probably be involved.
It should be.
It should be, unless we have another industrial revolution where we completely discover a new material that will help us.
I mean, I think the best thing is, also, if you're doing this, it's very easy to keep the same ship. Like, with the other engine, like, with chemical...
Look at the Martian, Hermes. Exactly. Four missions.
Exactly. With chemical burns, you lose your stages while throwing off all that...
Weight.
However, with this, you just can just fill up with a little bit more... And the particles allow you to go for really long amounts of time. And, you know, yeah.
Nice. Ion engine.
I feel a little bit lost. But, anyways, I think that's good for today. Do you have any last words, Zach?
Keep out the lookout for the ion engines and the Artemis project. Try and bring the hype back to it. We're going to the moon again. I think people should be noticing it a bit more.
I think that is a cool thing.
Yeah, yes, we're going to the moon again. It's Apollo all over again. This is going to be great. Especially, we're coming to the point where we can start to help out, kind of, but not really.
No.
We kind of just sit and watch. Well, yeah, exciting times.
Canada.
Oh, yeah, Canada. What can I say? Exciting times are coming forward.
So, yeah, I would like to thank you guys for all watching.
What do you think this is? YouTube?
Listening.
Yeah, there it is.
I want you guys to have a safe and fantastic rest of your day. Catch you guys in another podcast, and make sure to take it to the max.